Thanks very much, Ray. Ray was quite instrumental in this initiative that I'm going to talk a little bit about today and the Indian Health Service experience. And I want to acknowledge Cheyenne Jim, who is here in the audience, who's my co-author and did a lot of the background work on this. So just, I can never resist an opportunity to talk a little bit about the Indian Health Service and clear up any misconceptions people might have about the agency. We are part of the Department of Health and Human Services, so we're a sister agency to CDC. And we are the federal health care provider for eligible American Indian Alaska Natives. So not all American Indians and Alaska Natives can receive care from Indian Health Service. You have to be a member of a federally recognized tribe. And it's not an entitlement program, so we don't have a bottomless budget. We provide health care to about 1.4 million American Indian Alaska Natives. So if you look at census data, this is about 60% of the American Indian Alaska Native population that said they were only American Indian Alaska Native. So if you include people who said they were American Indian Alaska Native in combination with another race, we're actually serving a much smaller proportion of that. So just to keep that in mind, we are serving one portion of the American Indian Alaska Native population. It is a highly decentralized system. I think people say, oh, Indian Health Service. So you can just go out and figure out what's going on in all your facilities across the country, and it's going to be really easy for you because you're one centralized agency. We're not. We're highly decentralized, and I'll show you a couple of slides that will help you understand that. And then finally, we are underfunded. Indian Health Service receives about 60% of what they estimate they would need to provide the same level of health care as federal employees receive. And here's a comparison of IHS compared to some other federally funded health programs. And finally, through the Indian Health Service, we have a system that we describe as the ITU system, which is present in 35 states. And the I stands for Indian Health Service Facilities. So those are facilities that are managed and run directly by the Indian Health Service. Then we have a larger proportion of tribal health facilities. So these are healthcare facilities that receive their funding from IHS, but they're often managed by the tribe themselves. And then finally, we have urban Indian health facilities that receive a small proportion of funding from Indian Health Service, but often have other sources for funding for their services. And this is just to give you a layout of the 12 administrative regions that Indian Health Service is broken into. So you can see many of our regions combine multiple states, and further confused by the fact that they're named after the city in which the area office is located. So the Billings area is actually Montana and Wyoming. And you can see in the bottom here in the, getting to my cursor here. Southwest here, the Navajo Nation, which spans multiple different states and is its own IHS area. So here's a little bit of background on the initiative that Ray mentioned. The Healthy People 2010 goal is 60% coverage for healthcare personnel with influenza vaccination. And as Megan noted, in 2007, that was less than 50%. And so the department announced an initiative for this last flu season to try to improve healthcare personnel influenza vaccinations among the federal agencies. So each HHS agency was asked to track and report on their flu vaccination coverage, and it was pretty specific that the definition to be used was all the staff who worked in the healthcare facility. So thinking back to our rather decentralized nature in Indian Health Service, we saw this and went, oh dear, this is going to be a little bit of a challenge. So what we did is we established an interdisciplinary working group, and this was really important because each of our facilities is different, and so the point person at each facility could be very different. So we had infection control people, we had environmental health people, of course our nursing staff, providers, and we also had to make sure to include the administrative folks on this initiative. And basically we asked each IHS area to designate an area influenza coordinator who would work with the facilities in their area. And one thing I want to just note here is that our facilities include both hospitals, but most of them are outpatient facilities. So some of these can be very small facilities with maybe three or four providers. And then we have some large tertiary care hospitals that were also included in this initiative. In terms of what we did, we hosted an agency-wide web-based informational session, and we covered many of the topics that were included in the HHS healthcare personnel flu vaccination toolkit, but we tailored it a little bit for the Indian Health Service and included people talking about transmission, vaccination, how to define healthcare personnel. We also ended up having some people from employee health there because that was a real issue for some of our staff in terms of tracking and whether or not they could be recording this information in our electronic medical record system. And then, of course, we covered some of the strategies and the published literature that was out there on vaccinating healthcare personnel. We posted materials quite prominently on our IHS website, including guidance about the initiative and what we were expecting from our facilities. We developed some sample Excel reporting forms that people could use. We developed some PowerPoint presentations, again, tailored to the Indian Health Service environment that targeted both clinical as well as the lay healthcare personnel that work in our staff, and of course the administrative personnel. And we had links to the HHS healthcare personnel flu vaccination toolkit, and those materials are up on our website and anybody can access them. So for the data collection, each of the area influenza coordinators targeted the facilities in their area and collected the data from all of their sites for an aggregate report in their area. The IHS facilities were required to report, and we encouraged the tribal and the urban Indian programs to participate as well. Those aggregate reports were submitted to us at the immunization program, and then we did a follow-up survey to try to get a better handle on some of the vaccination strategies that were used. So here are the coverage results. We got reports from all 12 of our IHS areas, and just to let you know, in each area, the healthcare personnel ranged anywhere from 49 people in one area to over 5,000 in a couple of areas. Now, if you break it down by the different clinic type, we had 72 of our IHS facilities reporting on over 12,000 healthcare personnel, and the vaccination rate was 74.5%. Now, in our guidance, we did tell them to check and see if the person had received the vaccination outside of the facility. So that may account for some of the high numbers, though I will say that when we get into the strategies pieces, most of our sites were offering flu vaccination on site. Tribal facilities had slightly lower coverage. I'm challenged by the cursor. There we go. 53 facilities reported with about 10,000 healthcare personnel. Coverage was a little bit lower at almost 70%. And then our urban facilities, of 12 of our 34 reported and 670 healthcare personnel, and a much lower vaccination coverage rate. If you combine all of those facilities together, we did have an overall coverage rate of those 23,000 employees of 71.5%. And this just breaks down the coverage here by IHS area. I will note that the Nashville area, shown here in brown, had the highest coverage. They also had the lowest number of healthcare personnel in that region. They only had 49, so a little bit easier to track. And then we had a low of California with about 50%. California is particularly challenged. They have all tribal and urban programs, and they're very small. And I think when I show you some of the other data, there were a lot of unknowns in that area that I think might have affected the coverage there. I will also note that the Oklahoma and the Navajo areas did very, very well with their coverage. I think over 80% there for Oklahoma and about 73% for Navajo. And those are our two largest areas with over 5,000 healthcare personnel in the areas. And then this is refusals and unknown. Refusals here did include those who indicated that they had a medical contraindication or they refused the vaccine. And you can see some variation there with the overall refusal rate of about 10% for all of our IHS areas combined, and the unknown a little bit of under 20%, and then some variation between the areas. So here's that survey on strategies. This was the flu pumpkin that our staff in the Division of Epidemiology submitted for the pumpkin carving contest. I actually had no hand in this. This was other people in our office said, oh, we have to do the flu pumpkin. We had a flu clinic in our building for headquarters level staff. So we sent out this survey through the area flu coordinators, and they sent that out in turn to the different facilities, and 113 facilities responded to that survey. And one of the questions we asked them was, who did they target? Did they target just direct care providers or all providers? And 80% indicated they had really targeted and were tracking flu coverage among all of the staff in their hospitals, so including administrative, housekeeping, security, et cetera. 58% had already been tracking healthcare personnel flu vaccination prior to this initiative, probably related to the JCO standards that had come out. And the majority of them were really doing this manually. They basically created a spreadsheet with a list of all the employees and went around and figured out who'd been vaccinated and who hadn't. 35% were using an electronic medical record to help them with that or in conjunction with a manual method. Most of them were using more than one strategy, and 27% had used the resources available on the IHS website. And this is just a compilation of the different strategies used. Again, people could have chosen more than one strategy, so that does add up to more than 100%. The majority of those, 80% of them, had actual on-site flu clinics that they were providing the vaccine free of charge to their staff. 38% had made educational presentations. Almost a little more than a third were using declination forms, and then mobile vaccination cards. And I was really surprised at the number of facilities that literally were doing individual follow-up. So a lot of either direct email or follow-up, or they didn't come to the flu clinic, so I tracked them down. There was definitely a lot of that going on. So in terms of the next steps of what we're going to do as an agency with this information, we've got to get our final report out and disseminate that to our areas, try to foster a little bit of friendly competition. And then looking at the targets that we want to set as an agency for next year, certainly in terms of coverage, but we really like to work on the number of unknown. It's currently at 18% for all of our IHS areas, and we'd really like to try to see more of our tribal facilities participating. We'd also like to improve on the data collection process, and as Megan mentioned, really break out medical contraindications versus refusals. And then finally, we're actually in the process of updating the IHS employee manual. When we started this initiative, we took a look at the immunization chapter in our manual, and it hadn't been updated since 93. And we said, oh, here's an opportunity. So we're looking at that right now, and we're currently revising that to include Tdap and influenza. DOT will go the required route, but definitely probably strongly encouraged will be in there.
Thank you very much, Amy. Comments, questions for Amy about this work? Please come to the microphone, tell me who you are and where you're from, and ask your question.
Megan Lindley, CDC. Amy, you alluded to this, but I was curious, what proportion of the tribal and urban facilities who weren't required to report, what proportion actually reported to you?
Well, we got over 90% of our IHS facilities. I should say that off the start. I think there were only two that didn't report. Of the tribal facilities, it was a much lower number. We had about 20% of the tribal facilities that ended up reporting, and in the urban, it was about a third of them.
Other comments or questions? Dr. Sawyer.
You mentioned Tdap. Did you collect any data, either of the presenters who focused on healthcare workers, any data on Tdap for healthcare workers yet?
We don't have that at the Indian Health Service yet, but that's definitely something that we'd like to look at tracking as well in the next round. I think this was sort of our pilot to try to see how we could do it, collecting this information from a very decentralized agency. Hopefully now that this went this well, and if we update our healthcare employee manual, we would like to look at tracking Tdap and any other vaccines, MMR in particular, among our employees.
Good afternoon. I'm with Dallas Fire and Rescue. I have a concern that I'd like to see if you address the paramedics who are not part of a facility, but actually bring people to the hospital or bring people to these areas. Do you concern yourself with them, or is there any type of tracking that you're aware of for the firefighters and for the paramedics and police officers who actually impact that system for site care?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I can't say for certain, as we didn't ask that specific question, but for most of our facilities, the paramedic staff would be considered part of that hospital staff and would be included in the influenza vaccination initiative. Many of our tribal facilities do vaccinate the police department and the fire department. For the purposes of this initiative, we really asked them to focus on people who are working in the hospital setting. So again, we assumed that people were including paramedics. We talked about including paramedics, but firefighters and police probably weren't outside of this particular initiative in terms of tracking.
Any other comments or questions? I think I have one, and if you said this, I apologize. I guess I may have not listened. Megan defined for us these five categories of types of personnel, and I'm not sure if you said that, but the point is, most of these folks, it sounds like, are employed by the different types of facilities. Did they also ask about physicians who may be credentialed staff, as she called them, contractors, students, and volunteers? So I think you said your definition includes all those people, but I just want to be sure I understood that correctly.
Technically, yes, the definition did include that. When we had our presentation, we did go over that particular topic and also posted that in our materials that we meant students, we meant volunteers, we meant visiting physicians, visiting staff. We have a lot of locum tenens staff that come through Indian Health Service facilities. We also often have a mix of direct federal employees as well as contractors within these facilities. And the message that went out was all of those people who are in the hospital would be included in this initiative. Now, again, we had no way of validating if that really happened or not, but that was the intention.
A question. Why did you choose to make these immunizations recommended rather than mandatory?
You know, that's an IHS policy issue. It's still a point of discussion. I've been listening with great interest to the VA's discussions around this and some of the data that's come out that showed that making it mandatory actually may not increase your coverage rates. And considering that we don't have it mandatory and we already seem it to be at a pretty high rate, and considering how we can alienate some of our staff by making it mandatory, that's kind of where we are. It still is under negotiation, but I think some of what's coming out makes us feel we can probably get where we want to be without making it required.